looking for songs about sleep.
Huh.
Your suggestions. I was thinking of I'm Only Sleeping by the Beatles. Of course, my mind goes to the Beatles. So we would love to hear your suggestions.
There's a Goodnight Moon song.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yes. Who sings that song?
I remember Mark Turner loved that song, and he would play it. We would love to hear from you. As Chris, you know, on the spot, put together that playlist for that request line. It's kind of cool to get people weighing in and putting stuff together.
Yeah, there's a song called Goodnight Moon by Shivery.
That's it.
Okay,
yep.
So, yeah, text in your suggestions, 218-326-1234.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Dave Mattingly. Authorities in Michigan say the gunman who rammed his pickup truck into a church, started shooting, and then set the building on fire was a 40-year-old former U.S. Marine. The attack at the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in Grand Blanc left at least four people dead and eight others injured. Responding police shot and killed the gunman. Reuben Coleman is the acting special agent in charge with the FBI's Detroit field office.
This act of violence has no place in our state or anywhere else in our country. The FBI is committed to continue finding out the facts, circumstances, and motives behind this tragedy.
The gunman was identified as Thomas Jacob Sanford, who lived in nearby Burton, Michigan. Authorities have been searching the ruins of the church for other possible victims. Hundreds of people were attending the church service at the time of the attack. The state of Oregon is suing the Trump administration to try to block the president from deploying National Guard troops to Portland to combat crime, as Trump did in Washington, D.C. Tiffany Kamhi with Oregon Public Broadcasting reports on what the governor is saying.
Oregon Governor Tina Kotek says sending National Guard members to the state's largest city is an abuse of federal power. Kotek says she's working closely with Oregon's Attorney General on litigation that alleges the move is unlawful.
Oregon is our home. It is not a military target. And we're going to fight back to make sure that we can keep Oregon safe.
The suit seeks a temporary restraining order to block the deployment of armed forces. President Trump has been threatening to send troops to Portland for weeks, citing security concerns at the city's Immigration and Customs Enforcement facility. For NPR News, I'm Tiffany Kamhi in Portland.
Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth will be addressing hundreds of U.S. military admirals and generals tomorrow at Marine Base Quantico in Virginia. NPR's Tom Bowman reports.
Secretary Hegseth and his staff have said little about the reason for ordering senior officers from around the world to attend the morning meeting. Sources tell NPR Hegseth is expected to talk about homeland defense and tell the admirals and generals about the ongoing plan to restore what he calls a warrior ethos, a move that includes toughening physical fitness standards for the troops. Hegseth has repeatedly said the military is too woke and focused on diversity. He has fired multiple senior officers citing these reasons or suggesting they got their jobs because of diversity. Hegseth has also said the military is top-heavy with senior officers and wants to cut their numbers by 20%. Tom Bowman, NPR News.
President Trump tells NBC News he plans to attend that meeting. This is NPR News from Washington. Later today at the White House, President Trump plans to meet with congressional leaders to see if they can come to some kind of an agreement to prevent a government shutdown. Congress has until tomorrow night to pass a spending bill to keep the government funded. The president canceled a meeting with Democratic leaders in Congress last week when he described their demands as unserious. The latest numbers on employment in the U.S. are due out at the end of the week. NPR's Rafael Nam has more.
Over the past several months, the U.S. has been creating a lot fewer jobs than economists had expected. That has led to concerns that the economy may be weaker than many investors had anticipated. So investors are keenly waiting for the latest employment numbers for September due out on Friday. There is a potential wrinkle, however. There could be a government shutdown this week unless Republicans and Democrats can clinch a short-term spending deal. A shutdown would delay the release of all data by the government, including the jobs numbers, meaning investors may have to wait a little bit longer. Rafael Nam, NPR News.
New York Mayor Eric Adams is dropping his bid to seek re-election as an independent. In a video released yesterday on social media, Adams acknowledged a now-dismissed federal corruption case against him has left many voters wary of him. He said that's made it difficult to raise enough money to run a serious campaign. Adams did not endorse any of the other candidates. They include State Assemblyman Zohran Mamdani and former New York Governor Andrew Cuomo. I'm Dave Mattingly in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Luminescence Foundation. Luminescence Foundation is dedicated to shedding light on neurological research focused on Alzheimer's and Parkinson's diseases and supporting land conservation initiatives. This is NPR.
It is 8:06 and you're listening to People Powered KAXE. It is the Monday morning show. I'm Jennifer Barr with Heidi Holton.
We're talking butterflies coming up with Allison Barta. Stay tuned for that at 9 o'clock. Chris Walker with Headwaters. We did get a suggestion for music. We heard from our friend Booka. He says, The Heaven and Earth Grocery Store by James McBride.
Oh, yeah, that book.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, wonderful author.
He also wrote The Color of Water. Oh, I was thinking he was, I don't know why, he was getting grocery stores and Good Night Moon and different things mixed up. He also wrote The Color of Water. That was made into a movie, so it's better known. Oh, that was Edith, not Booka. Thanks, Edith. Good to hear from you this morning.
We've been talking grocery stores, too, as our question of the week. We heard from Mike in Mendota Heights, who said, I grew up in St. Paul, obviously not a small town. However, we did have a neighborhood grocery store called Swanson's, which had its own butcher shop. Many days when I walked to school, my black lab buck would walk with me, drop me off, and on his way back home, stop by the back door of Swanson's. After a few barks, the butcher would come out and give Buck a bone. Sitting in my classroom, I imagined him proudly walking home and spending the morning on our front porch, gnawing away at his prized treat. Oh, that's beautiful.
Buck a bone.
So you can let us know your grocery store stories, your book suggestions, song suggestions about sleep. We love to hear it. Text 218-326-1234. Coming up in a few minutes, we are going to talk butterflies with Allison Barta. Right now, we are going to hear some new music from a band called Quatica, and appropriately, this one is called Monday.
To see what it'll hold. Have a heart on the line, airing out with my clothes. It's so easy to try, but it's harder to fall. Darling, don't you give up on a Monday. I wanna tell you, I wanna do. You'll probably take it the wrong way. My sleep.
It is the Monday Morning Show here on People Powered KAXE. I'm Jennifer Barr with Heidi Holton.
We receive support this morning from the Move It Real Estate Group, assisting clients with real estate purchases and sales for over 25 years, not only in Grand Rapids, but across northern Minnesota. Moves to what moves you, more at moveitrealestate.com.
We also receive support from Brainstorm Bakery, headquarters of Crapola, with four flavors of granola handcrafted at the bakery on East Sheridan Street in Ely. Online ordering available and more at brainstormbakery.com.
It is Monday morning. That means it is time for The Bright Spot, a chance to highlight something good in northern Minnesota.
If you are part of KAXE KBXE Season Watch Group on Facebook, you've probably seen butterfly photos by Allison Barta. She is giving a presentation this Wednesday, 6 o'clock at the Watermark Art Center in Bemidji, and she joins us now. Good morning, Allison.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm pretty excited about sharing what's going on here in Minnesota.
What is it about butterflies that has drawn you in?
That's a funny question. Okay, so, you know, I am going to be 69 years old shortly here, and ever since the 1960s, I've been infatuated with butterflies. They're just a wonderful part of this earth that we all need to appreciate, and I've really thoroughly enjoyed bringing all my discoveries to the people of Minnesota and Wisconsin and across the United States.
So you keep some careful records for the National Lepidopterist Society, which that word means one who studies butterflies, correct?
That's correct.
And how many species have you seen this year?
Well, that's interesting because I just went through my book and counted them up. I can't tell the exact number for this year, but I just counted up what I have found in 15 years in this area in Wisconsin, and I'm up to 102 species. Okay, so of course I haven't found 102 this year. I'm not sure what that number will be, but I'll have it counted up for Wednesday.
Yeah.
So you're out hunting for butterflies. How are you finding all these different sort of species? I'm sure once you start paying attention, they're just there.
Yeah, it's called immersing yourself in nature. A lot of times if I take people with me, they're like, how do you see that? Oh my gosh, I can't believe you saw that. Okay, so when you go out in nature, if you just immerse yourself, you start looking, and once you see one butterfly, all of a sudden you'll see another one, and you'll see another one. And, you know, everybody thinks about the monarch, because, of course, the monarch is like the king of butterflies. But the monarch is really big. I'm finding butterflies that are so tiny, they're as small as your thumbnail. And I have observation areas. I live in a fantastic area between Cass Lake and Walker called Oak Point. But these areas exist everywhere around northern Minnesota, all over Minnesota. All you have to do is find a country road that has good habitat and park your car and start walking and start looking.
Are there certain types of plants that you know, okay, there's like, say, milkweed, for example, that is here, so then I know I can find a certain species? Is there any clues like that?
Oh, sure. Okay, so, you know, milkweed will draw in more species than just the monarch. But there's other flowers, native flowers, like blazing star, cone flowers. I always tell people, plant zinnias and marigolds in your yard, because zinnias and marigolds will bloom well, like right now, well into the season. They're still blooming. And by now, the coneflowers and the blazing star, even, you know, everybody says, oh, oxeye daisies is a invasive flower, but many of our butterfly species have turned to oxeye daisies for food because their habitats with their food has been destroyed. And when you go to garden centers, they're pretty good about telling you, if you look on the tags when you're buying your flowers for the summer, they usually will say this flower attracts butterflies.
So tell us about a couple of species you've seen recently.
Oh my gosh, you wouldn't believe what happened to me. Okay, so I'm looking all the time, and I go into Wisconsin too. I go to the Driftless Zone where my brother lives. One of the things that I found here in right here on Oak Point, which was amazing, was an aberration of a Aphrodite fritillary. An aberration means when a caterpillar goes into a chrysalis, when it turns into a butterfly, it comes out looking totally different than what it's supposed to look like. And when I found it, I didn't realize it was an aberration right away, because the day before I took a drive up to the Big Bog, which is a fantastic place to look for butterflies. I went up to the Big Bog and I went over to Big Falls, and I found a butterfly that is called the California tortoiseshell. I actually found two of them. And I quickly called a scientist and I said, I'm taking pictures of this butterfly and I have no clue what it is. I've never seen this. And he calls me back and he goes, are you kidding me? You found a California tortoiseshell right here in northern Minnesota. And the next day I found this aberration just south of Cass Lake. And I was thinking, oh, maybe this is another butterfly that got brought here by the winds out west or something. And here it was an aberration. And people tell me that maybe once in a lifetime you will find an aberration. So I am really excited to show the people on Wednesday the pictures I took of the aberration.
Hmm. What does it take to take good photographs of butterflies? I suppose calmness on your part.
Okay, there's three factors into taking a picture of a butterfly. One, how windy is it out? Mm-hmm. Two, the butterfly is moving. And three, are you moving? Are you steady? So usually if I find a butterfly, windy days aren't the best, but I'll go looking anyways. But when you find one, I usually end up spending a half an hour with one butterfly that I really want to take photos of, unless it flies away. I don't have a super duper expensive camera. I have a Nikon P150 and it has a zoom on it, because as you know, if you get close to a butterfly, it'll fly away. So I rely on my zoom to zoom in on the butterflies. So those are the three factors. So typically if I find a butterfly that I really want pictures of, I keep following it and I keep taking photos until I have at least 20 photos, because those three factors can ruin a picture or photo. If you think you have a good picture and the wind or you moved or the butterfly moved, it won't be in focus. So have patience and take many photos. And usually when I'm looking at the results on my computer, I'm like, blurry, 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 dang it, blurry. All of a sudden I'll get to the one picture, I'm like, yes, I got it. So you have to have patience and take many photos.
We are talking with Allison Barta, a local butterfly expert, you could say. She will be giving a presentation this Wednesday, 6:00 at the Watermark Art Center in Bemidji. And you recently were on a road trip and you took some chrysalises with you. Tell us about that.
Okay, well, I'm sure a lot of people up north here are aware, you know, we're having warmer weather than usual for this time of the year. But I'm amazed. I wanted to, you know, go down and visit some family in Wisconsin down across the bridge from Wabasha. And I was concerned because I found six really big monarch caterpillars in my garden last week. And I was thinking, my gosh, I don't know if these caterpillars have enough time turn into a chrysalis and then morph into a butterfly before we get cold weather up here in the Bemidji area. So I put them in my butterfly house and I took them with me. That's the first time I've ever done that. And currently they are with my son, Scott Barta, down in the Racine Kenosha area in Wisconsin. And they haven't come out of their chrysalises yet, but I heard that they're getting close. So I thought, if I take them all the way down there, then when they're born this week, they will have a chance to migrate south versus, not yesterday, but the day before, right here in our garden, two more monarchs were born that I didn't find, and I don't know if they'll ever be able to make it. So I thought I would give them a little head start.
All right.
So it sounds like, Allison, this is a good connecting point, or you know, you know, you were talking about the butterfly you found in the big bog and that you called a scientist and they're, you know, people are willing to talk about it. What has this meant for you since you've been looking at butterflies since the 60s in terms of meeting people and community and all of that?
It's been amazing. It's truly been amazing. And I like to motivate other people to do what I'm doing because it's helping scientists to figure out what's going on with other species besides humans. You know, what are the animals and the insects? What are they all doing because of climate change? You know, and some of them are moving north. But it's really opened my eyes, too, because I'm looking and looking. Like one year, there was a variegated frit laid eggs in my garden, and I actually raised some variegated fritillaries, which aren't normal for this year, or aren't usual for this area. And one day, I went outside, and I found a Gulf fritillary in my yard. And I couldn't believe it. I'm like, I don't even know what this butterfly is. And I sent an email out, and a scientist immediately emailed me back and said, you have a Gulf fritillary in your yard. And I emailed back, the only Gulf I know is the Gulf of Mexico. I said, do you realize I'm barely south of Bemidji, Minnesota? And they said, yeah, you probably have a record sighting of a Gulf fritillary. So what are the chances that a Gulf fritillary would land in my yard so far from home and I would actually know what it was? Okay, so if people are out there taking pictures of butterflies, most likely they're going to find something too that doesn't belong here that is a fantastic thing to see right here in the Bemidji area. Oh, by the way, I did see a Melissa Blue in my yard too one year, and I always wanted to drive south of the cities to find Melissa Blues and photograph them. And then one day there was one right in my flower garden.
Wow.
So, yeah, I know. I was like, are you kidding me? I think it's a Melissa Blue. It's like, it's amazing when you find things that are so out of the ordinary for this area.
Yeah.
And and I have fantastic pictures of all the things that I have found. I have over 60,000 photos of butterflies now. This is 15 years I've been doing this in the Bemidji area.
So you'll be presenting on Wednesday at Watermark Art Center. And so what is your presentation like?
This summer has been so fabulous. I mean, finding that California tortoiseshell. And 2 weeks ago, I found a regal fritillary, which is amazing. I mean, they come from the prairie out west. So I'm putting together a slideshow just with the butterflies from this summer, and I have these awesome backdrops. And anybody who's been to one of my presentations knows I have these huge pictures of butterflies that I put behind me, and I'm making a special one just for this summer since I found so many cool things this summer. So you don't want to miss it. It's going to be fabulous. Every day this summer I have found something amazing. And I keep thinking to myself, what's going on? Why is this summer being so wonderful with me finding things? I don't know, but I'm really anxious or excited to share it with everybody on Wednesday.
You know, I'm looking, Allison, I'm searching while you're talking to see the butterflies you're talking about, and that California tortoiseshell looks like, if I saw it, I'd probably think that was a monarch. How would I know it's different?
Well, you know, there's a lot of butterflies that are orange like the monarch, but the size of the monarch and the specific markings on it and the way it flies. You know, after you're looking at a lot of butterfly species, you understand that when you see one flying in the distance and you can't even see it up close, I know it's a monarch just by its flight pattern. I know a variegated fritillary because it stays low to the ground and it kind of hides. I know the comma butterflies because they're quick moving and you have to zoom on them. And that tortoiseshell from California, there was two of them. They were hanging out with some comma species. That species is smaller than a monarch. So after a while, you understand their flight patterns and their size and their markings. And there's even one called the harvester, which is the only carnivorous butterfly in North America. And we're lucky. We have harvesters around here. I find them like in six different places, and I find them up at the Big Bog too. The harvester butterfly, if you're riding your bike and you start seeing this, what is that? There's something flying around my bike. Now it's flying around my arm. And you stop your bike, and this little tiny butterfly will go around you like a tornado, and then it'll land on you because you're sweating, and it likes to eat the minerals, the salt from your sweat, and you'll have this beautiful harvester butterfly sitting right on your arm. Okay, so I know when I see that tornado-like flight movement, I'm like, okay, it's a harvester. Okay, hold still, and it'll land on you. So, like I said, after a while, you understand the sizing, the color, the characteristics. And you know what? I learned all that when I was a little girl. When I was running up and down our alley chasing butterflies, I had acclimated myself to a lot of the characteristics of these species. And now that I'm older and I decided to do this 15 years ago, it was like natural to me. Like I knew right away because I remembered it from when I was a child. But anyways, and I'm excited too. Everybody gets one of my pamphlets that has almost every species in it that I have found. And they'll get to see this wonderful book by Larry Weber that's called Butterflies of the Northwoods. It's really cool that I use. It's my guide. And I'll bring my report, my summary that I do myself. I have been lucky enough to be chosen to have my pictures on the cover of national magazines, like on Butterfly Gardener. And last year, the National Lepidoptera season summary, they put five of my photos on their back cover. Actually, my bucket list is to get a photo on the front cover, but I haven't been able to do that yet. Competition's pretty steep when there's people from all over the United States entering photos. Anyways, and you know what else? When you start doing all this, if you join NABA, National North America Butterfly Association, you get these magazines in the mail, and you can go to this conference in Texas. And I went 2 years ago with Erica Bailey Johnson, and there was butterfly scientists there from all over the United States, and we got to spend 4 days looking at and taking pictures of species that you would never see in Minnesota. So if you want to get into this like I am, it's just a wonderful thing. It's amazing. And you know what? It takes you away from all the things that are going on in the world. It's wonderful to immerse yourself. But by the way, you got to be careful because twice now I've encountered a bear. Mm-hmm. And this summer a baby skunk ran out in front of me, but I didn't get sprayed. But you also have to be careful when you're out in nature. Because you never know what's out there. I didn't get hurt or anything, but it was sometimes it's tense moments can happen.
Yeah, for sure. As nature has its own way of doing things. That is Allison Barta. And you can see your presentation this Wednesday night, 6 o'clock at the Watermark Arts Center in Bemidji. Thanks so much for joining us, Allison.
You're welcome, and thank you so much for having me, and I hope to see everybody on Wednesday. We start at 6 o'clock. Oh, look, I'm looking up, and there's a monarch flying.
Perfect. That's great. Thanks, Allison.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
This has been The Bright Spot, and it's made possible with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
Across the water top.
That is Samantha Crane. Although we were just talking about butterflies, that is her song Dragonfly, which are also fascinating little creatures.
And so many different species that you don't really realize, kind of like Allison there, delightful, telling us about the millions of different kinds of butterflies. Dragonflies are similar too. So yeah, great music from Samantha Crane, just hearing from a listener who enjoyed that song. And we love hearing from you. We are People Powered Radio in Northern Minnesota, made possible by you, as well as our business supporters like Grand Itasca Clinic and Hospital. They're home to an experienced OBGYN team providing comprehensive women's health services, maternity and advanced gynecology care, all in Grand Rapids. Learn more, granditasca.org.
And we thank Headwaters Unitarian Universalist Fellowship in Bemidji. Huff's congregation strives to build bridges with the community and welcomes all to seek truth, practice love, and celebrate life. Learn more at headwatersuu.org. Our weather today, it's going to be a warm one, sunny, highs 80 to 84, light southwest winds, partly cloudy tonight, lows in the upper 50s, and tomorrow, partly to mostly sunny, highs 73 to 80.
Support comes from the Grand Rapids Players. They have the Great Gatsby, October 3rd through the 5th at the Rife in Grand Rapids. They celebrate the 100th anniversary since its original publishing. Friday through Saturday shows 7, Sundays at 2. Tickets available at grplayers.com.
It's time now for a special edition of the Up North Report.
For KAXE News, I'm Megan Buffington with a special edition of the Up North Report.
Welcome, everyone. My name is Katie Pratt. I work with the Minnesota Office of Collaboration and Dispute Resolution, and I'll be serving as the moderator this evening.
Around 400 Rangers packed into the Iron Trail Motors Event Center in Virginia earlier this month for a chance to address the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. The agency is in the process of issuing new wastewater permits for U.S. Steel's Keetac mine, but the inclusion of a decades-old, rarely enforced standard is dredging up a lot of emotions. Minnesota's wild rice sulfate standard is as central to miners' fears as it is to environmental advocates' hope. Those who rely on mining for their livelihoods worry that the PCA's efforts to finally enforce the limit will devastate the Iron Range. Environmental and Indigenous advocates say enforcement is long overdue to protect sacred Monoman and keep Minnesota's water clean. Sulfate itself doesn't actually impact wild rice. It's the potential for it to turn into sulfide that is the problem. When that chemical reaction occurs in lake sediment, the sulfide can be harmful to wild rice, especially as it is growing. Sulfate is generated throughout taconite mining and processing, and as mines reuse water, sulfate gets more concentrated. Mines eventually discharge this water, prompting concerns about sulfate pollution. Minnesota's wild rice sulfate standard was adopted by the PCA in 1973. The protective measure recognized the plant's environmental, economic, and cultural importance. Wild rice, Monoman in Ojibwe, is an important food source for waterfowl, and the plant is central to Ojibwe identity and way of life, past, present, and future. Leanna Goose is a leader of the Rise and Repair Alliance and a Leech Lake band member.
By upholding Minnesota's sulfate standard, we hold companies accountable for their pollution and protect a food that has nourished people here for generations.
The idea of limiting sulfate to protect wild rice is based on studies done by researcher John B. Moyle in the 1930s and 40s. He wrote in a 1975 letter that the limit was adopted after a phone call with someone from the PCA asking about water quality and wild rice. The 50-year-old letter includes Moyle's recommendations for a wastewater permit for Minnesota Power's Clay Boswell Energy Center in Cohasset, which the company called unreasonable. The sentiment was echoed decades later at the PCA's public meeting on the Keetac permits. Derek Peterson is the business manager for Laborers Local 1091.
I strongly urge you to update the wild rice sulfate standard with all the research, science, and site-specific variables. The current 10 is unrealistic level, and wild rice has been proven to be successful at up to 1,600 milligrams.
The site-specific standard was proposed by the PCA in 2017. The agency came up with the rule after the legislature told them to overhaul the existing standard. Each body of water would have had its own limit based on its unique chemistry. But in 2018, an administrative law judge rejected the rule change, writing the PCA failed to prove that the new standard would be, quote, equally or more protective of wild rice waters. There are multiple factors that influence the success of a wild rice bed in a given year and over time. Studies, including Moyles, seem to agree that the exact necessary sulfate limit can vary, though to what degree is more widely debated. Hay Lake is small and remote. It's the first wild rice water downstream of Keetac. U.S. Steel has been discharging into the water for decades and says there's still healthy wild rice growing there. But environmental groups recently visited and say the rice looks sick. Mike Maleska is a former United Steelworker Unit president and now part of the nonprofit Water Legacy.
What was the rice like here when you were young?
It went from just to the right of the inlet over there, about where that tree line drops off. It came all the way, that dense, all the way around the lake.
This really hurts. This really hurts here.
There's a lot more to the sulfate story. Read more about the complex saga and recent updates at kaxe.org. That's it for this special edition of the Up North Report from the KAXE News Desk. I'm Megan Buffington, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is made possible by Woodland Bank, providing customers with personal and business banking solutions, as well as offering Kasasa checking accounts. You can learn more online at woodland.bank.
Chin, watching a little more of me blow away on the wind. I listen to the whispers, bending out a shape to fit into a picture I didn't even want to take. Like a mockingbird singing a thousand songs that don't belong to me, just to see who's listening. The song of a mockingbird hidden within my palm, the one that's just for me. But if you listen closely and get a little bit lucky, you just might hear my melody, my secret melody. I patchworked myself together, strung a fence across the plains. Try to tame it all for better, but some wilds you just can't claim. If beauty's in the eye, I'm gonna be mindful where I look. I'm gonna get a bird's eye from the sky up. Every chance I took, like a mockingbird singing a thousand. Listening. The song of a mockingbird hidden within my palm, the one that's just for me. But if you listen closely and get a little bit lucky, well, you just might hear my melody, my secret melody. Fine. Oh, but it's mine. I know that it's mine.
that don't belong to me, just to see who's listening to the song of a mockingbird hidden within my palm, the one that's just for me. If you listen closely and get a little bit lucky, well, you just might hear my melody, my secret melody. Oh, my melody, my secret melody.
That is Larkin Poe with an acoustic version of their song Mockingbird. Here on the Monday Morning Show on KAXE, I'm Jennifer Barr with Heidi Holton.
We're still collecting your stories. We opened up our question of the week about grocery stores. What do you remember about grocery stores from when you were a kid? We've been hearing from lots of folks, whether it is riding on the bottom of the cart or the Brenda told us about four grocery stores in her town of Walker when she was growing up. You can text in 218-326-1234.
Support comes from Hibbing Chrysler Center, serving northern Minnesota, carrying Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, and Ram vehicles with staff available to assist on the Beltline in Hibbing or at HibbingChrysler.us.
Going to be sunny today, highs 80 to 84 with light southwest winds, partly cloudy tonight with lows in the upper 50s, partly to mostly sunny for tomorrow, Tuesday, with highs 73 to 80. Southeast winds from 5 to 15 and overnight lows around 60, and looking sunny again on Wednesday with highs in the upper 70s to low 80s. And Jennifer, you said it might cool down a little bit by Friday?
Friday, Saturday, a little bit, yep. Is Whitney with Dandelions here on the Monday Morning Show on KAXE. I'm Jennifer Barr with Heidi Holton.
Coming up at 9 o'clock, we bring you Headwaters. Chris Walker will be your host.
The annual Candlelight Vigil at Angel of Hope Memorial Park is next Monday, October 6th, beginning at 6 o'clock. Joining us now are Kathleen Blake and Dale Christie. Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
Tell us about the Angel of Hope Park.
Well, the Angel of Hope Park was established in 2010
across, it's on the Mississippi River, across the river from the Blandin Foundation and across from the old hospital, if, for those of you who can remember that. It was established by a small group of people in the community as a place for family members to remember a child who has died. Maybe, Dale, you could tell a little bit about the vigil that we're going to be holding on October 6th.
Yes, the Angel of Hope Memorial Park, as you said, was established on the south bank of the Mississippi River. It's a place of special comfort and peace to families who grieve the loss of a child. So each year on October 6th, a candlelight vigil is held as a special time to bring families together in celebration and remembrance of their child. The loss of a child, no matter the age of the child, is a special loss for parents and family members. A brief ceremony and an opportunity for each family to say the name of their child or children, if they wish, is held at the Angel Memorial or Angel of Hope Memorial Park. Again, it's the next Monday, October 6th at 6 o'clock, and it's followed by refreshments and music at River Grande, and everyone is welcome.
What does it mean, you have both lost children, and what does it mean to be able to come together with others who have experienced that same thing?
So often, after a child dies, of course people rally around you immediately and try to provide support. But I think often people don't know what to say, or they're even sometimes afraid after a certain period of time has gone by to bring up the name of your child for fear that they will make you sad. Mm-hmm. Of course, we're already sad.
Yeah.
And it is, it's really a gift when people ask about our child, because our children are no longer with us, and so we get to in some ways, keep their memory alive by being able to talk about them. This vigil that we hold on an annual basis, I think for some people, it is their only opportunity to get together with other parents and actually to say out loud the name of their child. And it's accompanied by a brief, I guess you would call it ceremony. We have a little bit of music, often a speaker, pastor or a speaker will say just a brief, a few words to the family. And then we have our candles, and each family is given the opportunity to say the name of their child.
So it sounds like, Kathleen, you both have said naming your child, that we can help folks by, doesn't need to be once a year. We can ask about your children at other times as well.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that I have found and didn't realize that others felt the same is that you worry about people forgetting your child.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so this is a chance for people to get together who also have those same worries and share in that feeling together. It's great to bring up good memories of your children, and like Kathleen said, it's a lot of people find it difficult to or don't know whether they should say anything or not, and so this is the chance for parents to get together and remember each other's children.
And we're talking about naming, but there are actually names of the children too there. Can you kind of talk about that?
So there are pavers around the statue. And if you haven't had a chance to see the statue, the Angel of Hope statue, it's really, it's in a beautiful setting and it's a beautiful statue. But around the base of the statue are pavers with the names of children. People can contact the Grand Rapids Area Community Foundation to place a paver in the name of their child if they wish to do so.
And for this vigil, it's not just for those who have lost a child, correct? Like, you community members can come out and be supportive of those who are who need that. Is that correct? correct?
Certainly. Everyone is welcome. I think often, too, we think about the loss of a child and we think just of the parents. Mm-hmm. But siblings experience a great loss when a brother or sister dies. And it doesn't matter. We've said it, no matter the age of the child, it really doesn't matter if it was a young child or if it's an adult child. Family members all experience a great loss. And community members often experience that loss as well.
And your children's friends and people they grew up with.
Yes.
You talked, Kathleen, about people thinking that people probably don't want to bring up your children to you because they're going to make you more sad, which is probably not possible.
You're right about that.
but I think also people are afraid, right? They're really afraid that they don't even want to think about the worst thing happening to them, and we don't have language for grief in this world.
I think you're absolutely right about that. So, first of all, I think people mean well. I really think people mean well. But I did experience, especially when my son died, so I've lost both a son at the age of 8 and a half and a daughter who was 42. Especially when my son died, I think other parents were actually afraid of the fact that this could happen to them as well. And I saw people just shy away out of fear. Mm-hmm. And again, people are well-meaning. I don't mean to say anything negative about other parents because they do care.
Right.
We're talking about, you know, kind of the how hard it is and naming a child. Do you guys want to just, I mean, this is radio, so it's a little different, but do you want to name your children here for us?
Sure. My son was Dylan Christie. He died at the age of 21, and that was 6 years ago now.
And my son, Michael, died at the age of 8 and a half, and that was 37 years ago. And, you know, I still miss him. It isn't that heavy grief that I felt those first several years. And I'm not saying first year, I'm saying several years. And my daughter, Jessica, died 7 years ago. She was 42. They both died of different kinds of cancer. And it's a special loss.
Yeah.
My dad died in my 20s. My mom died a few years later in my 20s. A brother died in my 20s, and another brother died in my 30s. So I knew grief when my son died, but I did not know the depth of the grief that I would feel.
Yeah. We're talking with Kathleen Blake and Dale Christie. You can join them on Monday, October 6th, starting at 6 o'clock at the Angel of Hope Park in Grand Rapids to remember children who have been lost, and just make sure we do not forget and that we can honor them.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Right.
That is new music from She, Disco Life, here on the Monday Morning Show on KAXE. I'm Jennifer Barr with Heidi Holton.
Chris Walker waiting in the wings. He'll bring us Headwaters. We received support this morning from Hot Tubs of Northern Minnesota on Middle School Avenue in Bemidji, offering hot tubs, pool tables, saunas, and more. Learn more online at hottubsmn.com.
We also thank ICTV. Stay tuned, stay connected with ICTV. Learn more at watchictv.org. As you mentioned, Chris Walker, our host for Headwaters this morning, and request line coming up at 10:30. He's going to play a set of music about sleep. Looking for your song suggestions, text in 218-326-1234.
Going to be sunny today, highs 80 to 84 with light southwest winds. Partly cloudy tonight, lows in the upper 50s. And tomorrow, Tuesday, partly to mostly sunny, high 73 to 80. Southeast winds 5 to 15, gusting higher and sunny on Wednesday. Highs in the upper 70s to low 80s.
Kutaska Community Action in Grand Rapids is collecting gently used kids' Halloween costumes now until October 15th. Costumes may be dropped off at the former Murphy Elementary building from 9 to 4 on weekdays.
This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker. We are people-powered radio in northern Minnesota. You can join us at KAXE.org. Thank you so much for keeping us going, especially during this time of losing federal funding. You can donate at any time. It is appreciated.